Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to another episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. We just celebrated our 300th episode. This is now 301. Very excited to kick off the back 300 of this podcast. With me, as always, Mr. David Evanson and Randy Van Dyke. How are you two doing today?
Doing fantastic. But if it's the back 300, does that mean that we're going to be done at 600?
We're counting down.
The light at the end of the tunnel?
We're going to get, like, re-signed for another 300 episodes, but we got to play it by ear.
Cool.
It's like AD and BC. We're now at 1 AD. we've stopped counting down. Now we're counting back upwards. And I am doing amazing because I cannot wait to talk about all of these topics, of which I have numerous thoughts and comments on. But Justin, first, how are you?
I am good. I was a little sad because we lost Fred Willard the other day. Very funny comedian. He had been in a million TV shows and movies, probably spanning across like 50 years. A couple of my favorites were some King of the Hill episodes and then Best in Show. I think every time I see a dog, I'm always like, that looks like a fast dog. And I have him to thank for that. So it's really sad about that. I don't know about you guys, but that hit me in the feels when I woke up in the morning.
Was he like the one human that's in WALL-E or something like that, some animated movie?
He is in WALL-E. I don't think he plays a human, though.
Oh, really?
I mean, I don't think so.
Like a live-action human in a CG movie? Like, and it feels like weirdly out of place. I don't know. I've only seen WALL-E once. But anyway, he was cool.
Yeah, no, I'm super sad. Obviously, Best in Show is the standout for me. Some of the like the lesser known roles, he always cracked me up at Anchorman because he was like the boss.
Oh, boss.
Just doing like crystal meth and like beating up nuns and stuff like that. So he's made me laugh. And then later on in life, he, I used to watch Modern Family a lot before it became, you know, Modern Family. And he played Phil's dad. And he was one of my, Phil was one of my favorite characters just because he was kind of the goofy dad that I aspire to be. And then when you met his dad, you know, he was even that to the extreme. So
right. It made sense.
Very, very, very sad to see that he had passed. He was extremely funny and just always had something. Always seemed, even when the scene wasn't about him, he kind of always had something. He made you remember him from that scene. Like just
right. And he had a really interesting voice, too, to where you could just spot it in an audio clip. It doesn't matter. It's like one of those things where you just always knew it was Fred Willard talking.
Yeah, he did a bunch of voice work, too, so yeah. Makes sense.
I heard him in King of the Hill on multiple episodes. Always made me laugh. I'm like, hey, that's Fred Willard. So, anyway, and also, Jerry Stiller passed away since our last episode. So that's two very funny people that are no longer with us, and that's just a real shame.
Yeah, I worked from home for several years before the coronavirus. I'd watch King of the Hill every single day. And he played Arthur Spooner, Leah Remini.
King of Queens.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
King of the Hill. You said the other amazing show.
King of Queens. And he played Arthur Spooner, which was Leah Remini's dad. And he was always just so funny. I remember one episode. He's like, this Standard and Phillips screwdriver racket has to end. Someone's got to break up the monopoly. And so he would take letters from like a typewriter and he would try to sell to like hardware stores. Like, it's called the Spooner. He never ceased to make me laugh, and like it's too bad. These legends are leaving us.
Yeah, that's a shame. Yep. I don't know how to segue in a positive way.
Speaking of terrible news.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one.
That's a perfect segue, really.
How about this? Speaking of headlines I never wanted to read.
Yes, that's a good one. Charlize Theron will not be returning for the Mad Max Fury Road Furiosa prequel. Wah, wah. That's a shame. I love the Furiosa, and I remember when Fury Road came out, we did a podcast on movies that we were looking forward to the most in whatever year, that was 2015, and Randy's like, Fury Road, man. We're like, what are you talking about? That movie's gonna suck ass. And It ended up being like one of the greatest movies ever made, action spectacular wise.
I cannot overstate my love for the idea of the Mad Max franchise. Not all of the movies within it, but the idea of what it is, what it could be, what it has been, and what it can return to.
Sure.
Which is to say, you know, there's a bumpy road of ups and downs in terms of how good those movies are. And I would go so far as to say, very much like the beginning entries into the Star Trek movie series, the even ones are the ones you want to go for.
Right.
Yeah, I remember the podcast where we were picking our best, most anticipated and least anticipated of 2015, because 2015 was going to be the blockbuster apocalypse. And I remember just thinking, like, who's going to watch this Fury Road? No one's going to watch it. It's going to be dumb. It's going to make like $8. And
I don't even know what my pick was.
Yeah. It was probably like, it was either probably Avengers or Star Wars, Jurassic World, something of that effect. But like, I was like, yeah, no, who's this going to be stupid? And then like, you know, 6 months later, I had to like eat my hat because I said something so stupid and so asinine. And I will disagree with Randy. The greatest Mad Max movie is clearly Thunderdome. Master Blaster, Tina Turner. They got like a plane. Shut your mouth.
Okay. How many Mad Max movies have you seen?
I mean, I've seen the two good ones. I've seen 3 and 4.
3 and 4. So
I hear one is unwatchable.
There's two on the other foot in this particular situation, because usually I'm the one that comes in only having seen like one or two obscure movies out of the franchise, never the beginning ones. But in your case, it's okay to skip the first one. My entry into it was probably late 80s, early 90s. I saw The Road Warrior for the first time, which is the second Mad Max movie. And it blew my preteen mind, and I'm like, it's got violence and cars and nudity and all sorts of crazy shit going on in it. And I, you know, like my 12, 13 year old brain was like, holy hell, this is it for me. And then when I discovered that there was another movie that took place before, I was like, I have to see this fucking movie. And then, and this was like mid 90s. This is like years later. I finally am old enough to have my own Blockbuster video rental card, and I'm walking home from the Blockbuster on my way home. So what's the very first fucking movie I go to rent on my own without parental supervision? This teenage kid, I go to get the first Mad Max movie, and I sit there and I watch it. And it is it's an Australian cop movie. It has nothing to do with anything post-apocalyptic. There's like biker gangs and shit or whatever in it. But I remember watching it and going like, what the hell? It's like, okay, I think somebody slipped the wrong movie in the case here, because they have Mel Gibson's in it, but this has nothing to fucking do with Mad Max. And I could not get into it.
It's slow too. It's really slow.
It was a slow burn, and I could see it as an origin story, but how that movie ever got greenlit to make sequels is beyond me. But they took a really interesting approach with it by making the sequel completely different than the original. Right. Like
night and day. That we made before. Yeah, it's gonna be nothing like that.
Yeah, but you know, for the 12 fans that we've got in Australia, we're gonna call it, you know, Mad Max, so that they know they're getting the sequel, and then we're just gonna make something the whole rest of the world's going to enjoy.
So Road Warrior isn't – I thought it was like just kind of like El Mariachi and Desperados, where it was almost like a remake once they had money. Like he had no money to make Mad Max, but then like when Road Warrior came out, he's like, I got money, let's redo it.
Nothing – I mean –
follows the narrative of him losing his family.
It's very – I mean, I guess that's the only thread that ties it together, but I mean, that is it.
It's pretty bad.
And then okay, so Thunderdome is fun. And it's got that catchy theme song, and it's got Tina Turner in it, and it's got Master Blaster, and it's got Thunderdome, which is arguably a cool concept. But
two men enter, one man leaves.
Right? They okay. So here's my problem with Thunderdome. They went full like Die Hard on it, and this was even before Die Hard. So you could say Die Hard went Mad Max, I guess. And that is the big mistake that they made, is they had this really popular R-rated franchise, and they decided they wanted to make a PG-13 entry to try to get more kids involved or kids to like it.
They wanted more Randys to go see it and not have to go to the video store and go to the theater.
Yeah, go beyond the beaded curtain into the R-rated section. Oh, wait, no, that wasn't the R-rated section.
They thought many kids were going to watch this movie. I don't know why they were PG-13. I don't think it was that.
Well, but the problem is, I mean, what to me personally, as a kid growing up in the 80s and 90s, what really endeared the Road Warrior to me was the ultra violence. It was
was a small child. It was the visceral murder and blood that it got. I mean,
no, but I mean, it was a teacher that he wanted to wrap his mouth around.
He's like, one day this is the hill I'm going to die on.
Cars exploding. It was just like carnage and violence, and I loved it because we didn't have much exposure to that back in those days. I mean, I guess I didn't. So when I found little bits of it that I could grab onto, I latched onto it hard, and when I was expecting that same like killing without conscience, which isn't really a thing, but because the Mad Max movies, they have, you know, he's got something going on, but when I was expecting that same level of violence and the same level of action, I guess I should say action instead of violence because it sounds a little bit more politically correct, but when I was expecting that same level of action, I was let down. And it just felt a little bit watered down to me. It's not a bad movie. It's just it just doesn't go up. It doesn't rise to the level that the Road Warrior did. And then when Fury Road came out, holy hell, that was a true return to form. So here's the thing: anything with road in the title is going to work. You take road out of the title, and it's not going to work.
But now. I don't know. I always like the idea of going out on a high note. I'm kind of, I don't know if I shouldn't write them off necessarily, but I feel like if you make such a crowning jewel achievement like Fury Road, I think that's enough to just say, well, I'm out.
Well, I mean, his age, yeah, nobody would blame him for it. He's in his 70s, isn't he?
Yeah, he's made like 4 movies and they're all Mad Max movies.
Yeah.
No, well, he made Babe 2, Pig in the City.
Oh. Well, fair enough. Got to do something while you're raising money in between, sure. You know, in the 20-year gap in between Mad Max movies.
Yeah, but... Happy Feet.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. They went the animated route. But I mean, the whole thing with Charlize Theron is that it's going to be a prequel, and it turns out Mr. Miller is anti-CG de-aging. He believes that the technology is close, but not quite there to pull it off for an entire movie.
But turns out he got some of her genetic material when they were on the shoot for Fury Road, and he's been growing his own clone, which is aged about 19 right now, so it's perfect, right? Was that what the plan is?
That's dirty. I don't like that.
I don't know why it's a big deal. Charlize Theron is an amazing actor. You can change your hair. You could put, if she had like a short haircut and like different makeup, I can suspend disbelief, you know, that she's just a younger version of Furiosa. I mean, give her arm back. If she has her arm and hair, I'll be this is a totally different person.
I thought I remember something about it, wanting her to be like 19.
Oh, really? I just pulled that number out of my pocket, but
no, it was like a late teenager, 18 or 19.
Make her 25. I'd buy Charlize Theron as 25.
Sure.
How old was she supposed to be in Fury Road? Roughly 30s.
It's the sand ages you. The desert ages you.
It does. It can go crazy too.
she's like 22 in the Fury Road.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I mean, I guess if Matt Dillon can be a high school kid in 90210, then Charlize Theron can be 18.
If it's meant to be a significant time jump, you know. Before Fury Road, then I get the idea for recasting rather than trying to digitally de-age. So what is he saying? He just doesn't think that the technology is quite there yet.
Yes, that is correct. He says it's close, but there's something missing. Haven't quite made it yet, so I'm not going to use it.
So why does he have to pigeonhole this age? It's just infuriating that like
maybe she's like you guys said, she doesn't even want to do it. Maybe she's like, here's an idea. Eat a dick. I'm not doing it. It's the way you want.
Then he'll be like, you know what? We didn't want you anyway. You're old, you know?
Right. Which sounds I mean, Furiosa is hands down the best part of Fury Road.
She's way more interesting than Mad Max in that movie.
Yeah. And Charlize Theron is an incredible actress who has an amazing performance, and all of the buzz out of Mad Max was her. And, you know, if you don't want to use her, that's fine. Just say you think she's a bitch or you don't like her or something like that. You know, I don't understand why we have to be like, oh, she has to be 19, so we definitely can't use this amazing, you know, amazing Academy Award winning actress who just destroyed it in the first film. You know,
okay, well, here's the question. Did she initially sign up for multiple movies, or did she just sign up for the one?
So I thought I remember hearing that both, what is his name? Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron had signed for multiple movies, but now I feel like I have been sniffing glue and I don't remember that correctly. And I don't want to do my research whilst making this podcast. I just thought it was an interesting conversation, but I do not remember for sure the deets, as it were. I thought I remember her signing up for a sequel, not necessarily it being a prequel, though.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, because this is a prequel for sure. But wasn't there also talk of a sequel going that was going to happen after post?
That's still happening. It's Mad Max Wasteland, and she is not signed on for that.
Correct.
Okay, so it's going to be an actual Mad Max movie starring Mad Max, featuring Mad Max.
Yes.
Not Mad Max.
Who knows if he has any speaking roles? He'll be in it, but he might not talk.
So according to Playlist, Tom Hardy has agreed to do 3 more movies post Fury Road, but is unclear as to what Charlize Theron's future might be with the franchise. So there may have been like comments or something, but she's not officially signed on to anything. But the Tom Hardy is, which is unfortunate. I would gladly switch those because I don't think Tom Hardy's that great as an actor. As a person, he's probably uptown all the way.
he stood you up once on a commercial.
He did. I'm hard pressed to think of a performance of Tom Hardy. I'm like, oh yeah, no one else in the world could have done this performance.
Sure. I never know what he's saying. I can never hear a word that the man speaks.
He's got a goddamn mask. He was ready for COVID-19 years ago.
When we were watching that one,
Dunkirk.
Yeah, I honestly had no idea what the hell he was saying.
You didn't even give me an adjective when I got that, Justin.
What's that? Oh, I know, that's pretty good. I'm impressed. Oh, jeez. Yeah, he's just shouting into a freaking airplane the whole movie, and I had no idea what he was saying.
Checking his watch or something.
Anywho, I mean, I apologize to you, Randy, for not acknowledging the greatness that was going to come with Mad Max Fury Road. But when it came out, I saw it twice in the theater because I loved it so much. And I've since watched it multiple times. Can't get enough of that movie.
I apologize for nothing, Randy. I was in the press room when George Miller went over Fury Road at San Diego Comic-Con. And he could not have been more bored with talking about his own movie. So I just assumed.
I was in the room with you. I was there when that happened. And I was trying to sell you guys on it then. Yeah, I was trying to sell you guys on it then. And it just wasn't. Yeah.
What a three-part movie. That was the first part was it was George Miller. And then it was Matt Reeves for Planet of the Apes. And then it was.
Yeah, the whole X-Men cast was there.
X-Men, yeah.
Yeah. Well, then there was.
Days of Future Past.
Yeah. No, the Hobbit guy, Peter Jackson.
Oh.
He was there too, yeah. I remember the Nuke the Fridge guy was there. He's like, videotape me. I'm going to ask him a question. I'm going to ask Peter Jackson a question. I went on video. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, I miss Comic-Con.
And then it wasn't even a Star Trek question.
Yes. It's not a Star Trek question. Oh, jeez.
You asked him about King Kong, and I'm like, you really just asked him about King Kong at a Hobbit press room?
There's always one, dude. It's like when we went to the Firefly thing, and the first question was an Avengers question. To Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, Avengers came out like 2 months ago, and, you know, it made like $1 billion, and that's a pretty big deal. Are you going to make another one? It's like, wow.
Yeah, there will be more Marvel.
There's a hot take.
Got any Firefly questions?
Yeah, and then like the second or third question was like a castle question for Nathan Fillion. I'm like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, that's bad news bears. Although I will say that the photo that I hopped on a chair to get of the whole cast, I've seen that around on multiple websites.
Oh, someone took it? Get a patent troll to make some money.
No, I was like, hey, I took that photo. That's kind of neat.
Yeah.
I'm famous.
Yeah, I remember being kind of stuck in the back of the room and we weren't allowed to take photos or make noise or something, or we couldn't use flash or something like that, and the photos were just terrible. So we only ended up getting a couple decent ones out of that bunch.
Yeah.
I remember just being in the back of the room, not being able to see a damn thing.
Just heard voices.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Good times, though. Still good memories.
Yeah. Speaking of good memories, Justice League. David's favorite movie by his favorite director, Mr. Zack Snyder. We've all been hearing about this Snyder Cut, and does it exist? Would you watch it? And – I know it's something that it's a hot topic for Mr. Edmondson because he loves Mr. Zack Snyder so much. I just thought it'd be fun to kind of toss around this idea. Like, if it were a completed film and it had all the effects done, would you watch it?
100% yes.
Okay. I think that's good news.
I think that Snyder, while I don't enjoy a lot of the decisions he made, he had a unifying vision for what he wanted the DC universe to be. And I feel like he got to like the 10-yard line and they took the ball from him and said, they're just going to hand off to Whedon here and let him run it in for a touchdown. I think that he was setting some stuff up that I would like to see paid off. That there was some very interesting visuals in Batman v Superman, especially when it relates to like Apocalypse. And I think that I would love to see what he had to pull off. And, you know, if it shows up on HBO Max in 2 weeks, I will be, or yeah, 9 days, it'll be the first thing I watch on HBO Max.
Right. So that's the thing, right? Because he had two other movies after that. It was going to be a Justice League 2 and then like an untitled fifth movie. So he definitely had the arc that he wanted to tell. And then the tonal issues were happening, the mixed reviews on Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and then the Warner Brothers executives were like, I don't know about this movie, and people were nervous. And then of course he lost his daughter. Yeah, I was gonna say, and of course he had the family tragedy, got to step away. Joss Whedon filled in the role, did some reshoots, and ultimately Snyder got the director credit and Joss Whedon got a screenplay credit.
Yeah, I remember it was about a year ago that Kevin Smith really started to stoke the fire. I mean, there's been rumblings of the Snyder Cut forever, but we all assumed that it just wasn't possible because it wasn't done, it wasn't ready, there wasn't anything to show. And then Kevin Smith about a year ago said, like, not only is there a Snyder Cut, I have seen it, and it is incredible. And so,
that's fun.
and so I think it just kind of reinvigorated everyone. And then like Rob Liefeld was like tweeting about it, and like Zack Snyder. He had said something like, is it real? And Zack Snyder took a picture. I think it was of like all like the film reels. And it said, it's like, is it real? Of course it is. Or something snarky like that.
Right.
And so, I mean, if it's, I will definitely watch it if it exists. If it doesn't exist, I will live the rest of my life ignorantly blissful that I don't have to watch anything else Zack Snyder DC related.
Yep.
That's a shame. I really enjoyed, at the end of the day, I enjoyed Justice League. I think it would have been cool to see this other version for sure. But I just know that in my heart of hearts, when it was all said and done, I liked the way Superman ended up in that movie. And it breaks my heart that I am not going to see more of that.
Right. And just think, I mean, Zack Snyder cast the entire DC universe. You know, right. The Wonder Woman that we all know and love was cast by Zack Snyder for Batman v Superman. You know, obviously we're replacing Batman, but the Batman we got for a couple films was cast by him. You know, The Flash, Aquaman, you know, Cyborg, all these people that are getting other movies or have had standalone movies were all cast by Zack Snyder. So I'm not saying he is an untalented kook. I'm just saying that, well, I don't know what I'm saying.
Sure.
I'm saying that people who think that, you know, his dismissal from Justice League ended his involvement in the DC universe are just fooling themselves, because, you know, his stamp is all over all of these other films. You know, he handpicked some of the directors, you know, he handpicked most of the cast, and most of the story went through him and his wife as the main producing partners for Warner Brothers at the time.
Yeah. All right. I thought it would be fun to chat about. I definitely want to see it, but it's crazy.
More Batfleck. I'll watch as much Batfleck as I can get.
He's good. I like how menacing he is. He's a beast.
Just a segment of that. Did you see on like the Robert Pattinson interview, like the GQ interview and his photos and stuff?
He's yeah.
He's getting a lot of heat for that.
Yeah. He's just like all lounging in like freaking swimming pool goggles, and he's got like a big gulp. He's just looking like a total weirdo.
Well, I think a lot of people took umbrage to where like you're asking if he was still working out or something like that, and he's like, no, if you work out every day, you're part of the problem. And so people are just viewing that as him not taking his responsibility to the role. And you know, they're not wrong.
Wouldn't be all jacked like Affleck was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he said like, you know, I'm not going to be this jacked guy, you know, but Michael Keaton wasn't jacked, but you know,
right. I don't think Val Kilmer was either. Yeah, the suit's got all the muscles. It's like those t-shirts you get at the beach.
Exactly.
I mean, Clooney was ripped, but I mean, that's just because he's, you know, he's Clooney.
Right. He's been that way since he was born.
Yeah. And he's got those Christian perfectly Bale's oval little shaped nipples too, just like the Batsuit says.
I mean, yeah, the only one I guess that was ripped was Affleck. All the other ones were just like in shape dudes.
Yeah. Well, Christian Bale was.
I mean, he was in shape, but I mean, I wouldn't say he was like.
He wasn't jacked, yeah.
I mean, he wasn't doing like prison like workouts like Affleck.
Yeah. Affleck looks like an ogre, but he's really tall too. He's like 6'3", right?
Yeah, he's a big dude.
Big dude.
He was Batman.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something about that dude. He's a gorilla in that costume.
I did watch some of Batman v Superman the other day. It was the Clark Kent Bruce Wayne scene, and he is so good in that. And Henry Cavill as Clark Kent, just like Affleck's got the earpiece in his ear from Alfred talking to Bruce Wayne, and Clark Kent can hear it because he's got super hearing and stuff like that. And it's just fun to listen to him, just kind of like pretend he's not paying attention to what's going on in his ear. And then Lex Luthor comes in and ruins it all because
he's the worst.
Yes. Can't defend Zack Snyder for that one.
So bad. Can't stand that guy.
Bruce Wayne, Clark Kent. I love bringing people together.
Yeah. Honestly, it's so weird because that role, after that role, I just started finding reasons not to like Jesse Eisenberg anymore. And it's really weird because I saw like this interview with him where he was just treating the interviewer like a total dick. It was this nice lady that was just asking him questions about like the Now You See Me movie. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't giving her the time of day and was being very curt with his answers. And she was just trying to move it along. And he's like, well, hold on. This is my time. We're going to, shouldn't she be a little bit more respectful to my time? And it's like, oh my God, just end the interview. this guy's the worst.
Well, we went to Comic-Con, you compared it to like the Holocaust or was it genocide? Either way, it was bad.
Yeah, he's in a mood. I don't know. Maybe he woke up on the wrong side of the bed for multiple weeks. But I don't know, man. It's just sometimes you just got to suck that shit up and just go with it. And I get it that it's a long, grueling process and we all have bad days. But it just looks really bad on camera when you're being really mean to the nice person that's interviewing you.
Yeah. That's why he was so perfectly cast as Zuckerberg in The Social Network, which is an incredible film, and just because at its core you're probably not supposed to like Zuckerberg,
right? He's kind of a fucker in a lot of ways.
Yes. That's interesting fact, he does Eisenberg still does have Justice League Part 2 listed on his IMDb credits as announced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so mark your calendars.
I think we're done. It ended in a way to where we don't need another one, but either way, it is what it is.
It is.
Moving on. You know what we do need more of?
What do we need more of?
Scream. It's in the horror franchise that we all know and love and has been around for over 20 years. And gosh, it's almost 25. When did the first one come out? Like 96?
Mid-90s, yeah.
Well, 97 was Scream 2, so 96,
yeah. Yeah, it was 96. Holy shit. 24 years later. And then, obviously, with the current state of things, with COVID-19, this movie can't even begin to think about being made anytime soon. So let's just say 25 years later from the original one. That's quite a legacy. I don't think we necessarily need more Scream. It's being billed as a relaunch as opposed to, like, Scream 5, but Mr. David Arquette, Sheriff Dewey, he was a deputy, now he's sheriff, he is signed on for it. And they're talking to other cast members, and I know that Neve Campbell said that they were in very early talks, but she's concerned just because of COVID-19 that it, you know, who knows when it'll get off the ground, if it ever does. Now, I remember when like Scream 3 was being made. This is very early internet days where they were talking about bringing Matthew Lillard's character back in a way, like maybe he'll be like a twin brother or something because everyone loved him so much in the first one as Stu. And I think it would be fun to revisit that idea, hypothetically. I like Matthew Lillard.
I love Matthew Lillard. He was Shaggy, you know.
He was, not anymore.
Well, the interesting thing about that is I've heard the internet is all uproar because of the new Scoob movie. He's not Shaggy in it. And people are like, he should have been the voice. I can't imagine anybody else other than him being the voice. And then I'm thinking in my head, yeah, but fucking, what's his name?
Will Forte.
No. Oh,
sorry, the original one?
Casey Kasem?
Yeah.
Kasem, thank you. Yeah. I mean, he did the voice for decades and decades. And then I don't think anybody really freaked out when they brought in a younger actor to play him in live action. And
well, the incredibly talented Will Forte is Shaggy in this one.
Okay.
And like all of his roles, he is incredible.
All right. Well, then, so once again, the internet is wrong.
Well, I mean, I'm sure some people are pissed. That's what the internet's for.
Yeah. People are allowed to be pissed.
I'm saying I was excited because I like him. Zac Efron was Fred.
I could see that.
All right, yeah.
It was a really fun cast. But I'm sorry, we're talking about Scream here.
Sorry. That's okay. Yeah. And this would actually be the first Scream movie not to be directed by Wes Craven.
Oh, sad.
Mm. Yeah, that is sad. He passed away in 2015, I want to say.
That sounds good. Right.
And the last Scream feature film was 2010 with Scream 4.
Hmm. Well, as the person here who's probably most excited for this, Justin, does this clock for you? Is this something you're going to put on a calendar and be like, yeah, I could look forward to, or is it something that's going to be like, you're going to show up, hey, what do we want to watch? Well, Scream's here. Let's check this out.
I would go see Scream opening weekend. I love that franchise very much, and I feel like it would be, I don't want to say wrong of me not to support it, but because I have had such a good time with this franchise, it would be a disservice not to go see it again. I've seen all of them in the theaters, and it would be weird not to see this one.
I just feel that like Halloween is so intrinsic to Carpenter, like the DNA of Scream, just like Screams, no pun intended, like Wes Craven. And so I'm curious to see what route they go, like if they try to do like a bad copy of it or if they try to just make it their own. I would love to see them like update it kind of like within like the vein of like take like the tropes of like a Get Out or Us, you know, with like the new sensibilities of horror films that have a little more social agenda. I hope they try to do something wholly unique and not just try to, what would Wes do?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. I mean, I'm sure they'll put hopefully they'll get the right people involved. I know that Kevin Williamson was going to be an executive producer. And then the guys that did Ready or Not were going to direct. The name escapes me now, I have it in front of me. But I don't know. I think that'll work. As long as you have like, you know, the original writer guy involved, I think he knows what's good and what isn't. So that helps. Yeah.
And if you got David Arquette, that's all you need, right?
Sure.
Bring back.
I think it would be great to have them all. I mean, even if I feel like every movie we are all waiting for one of them, a newer character to pass away. You know, it was like or a legacy character to pass away. So when Scream 2 came out, you're like, okay, who's not gonna make it this time around? And poor Deputy Dewey, he got stabbed a lot in these movies. He was always injured, and you always thought you were gonna see the end of him, and he never did. Same and with Courtney Cox.
Jimmy Kennedy died in 3, right?
He did.
Oh.
Yeah, he
didn't. Oh, in 3, right? He's got like the videotape where
his sister delivered it. Yeah. But what can you do?
I don't know. Go see it. Randy's Randy's already in line.
He is. I actually wore my Ghostface costume to see Scream 2. And it was kind of fun because the movie opens with them at the movie theater. And, you know, poor Jada Pinkett Smith gets murdered, spoiler alert. And when everyone came out of the theater and then they saw me, they're like, oh. I'm like, what? Why are they all freaking out? It's just a dumb costume. And then the movie starts, and I'm like, oh, this was probably a bad idea.
I regret this. I instantly regret this.
And that's the only time I've ever, like, done any sort of cosplay whatsoever. And it was for Scream 2.
You peaked.
Yep. Pretty much. Oh, man. Felix likes to cosplay when he goes to the movies. Like, when we go see the Jurassic Park movies, he'll totally go. He has like, every character cosplay. Even, like, the guy that's driving the Jeep in the first one, the pink shirt. and like Muldoon. Candy shirt.
Oh no,
no, just the driver. Yeah, when he's like, just kind of shakes his head at Ian Malcolm. He's like, "You did it, son of a bitch! Actually, did it or whatever." but yeah, cosplay movies could be a bad idea. Don't do it.
Stay when cosplay backfires.
Yeah, totally. But at the end of the day, I think I can. I'll definitely go see it. It's not a problem whatsoever. And then, you know, even in high school, writing an essay on how Scream is reinventing the horror genre, I got this awesome scholarship for writing that essay, and I have Scream to thank for that. So I feel like I have to support them forever. Hopefully they don't make too many more of these so I don't have to keep seeing them, because I feel obligated. But that's neither here nor there at this point. Still got to be made, I suppose. Anyway, to more fun news, The Mandalorian, we love talking about that. All during May the 4th week, we got all kinds of fun news about new cast members and spoilers, and Boba Fett's going to be in it. We already talked about that a little bit. But now we know that Timothy Olyphant has been cast in an unknown role for Mandalorian Season 2. I love this guy. I think he's great. And I'll take any ounce of him that I can have.
Yeah, he does well when he seems to play like some kind of lawman.
Yeah. You know? Did you watch Justified?
No, I watched
Deadwood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was a fun show.
And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He was kind of a do-gooder in that movie, too.
Yeah, he also had a show called Santa Clarita Diet on Netflix with Drew Barrymore that took some risks, and it got canceled after 3 seasons, but he was super fun. He was like your stereotypical like real estate agent, and, like, big white smile, and just always like always happy, like always like he had like 12 things of coffee, and then all of a sudden his wife is a flesh-eating zombie. So yeah. He was a lot of fun, and I think he's great, and I can't wait to see who he plays. I hope it's a, you know, either original character, you know, because we've gotten a lot of legacy character casting news. It would be great to see that they're going to expand the roster as well. They did such a good job with The Mandalorian and with, you know, Cara Dune and Moff Gideon. I would hate for all of the new casting news to be new people, because we got, you know, Ahsoka, we got Captain Rex, we got Boba Fett. It would be cool to see him play just someone wholly new. But if he is a legacy character, he's a good enough actor. I'll watch him.
Do you want him to support the Mandalorian in his adventures, or would you rather him be someone that's after him?
I could see him taking over like the kind of the Carl Weathers role of like giving him like bounties and stuff. I could see him being like a shady like a bounty dealer. Like, hey, I got. I mean, even in like one episode, hey, look at me, I'm Timothy Olyphant. Or maybe he's like a used spaceship salesman or something like that.
Yeah, Danny Cordray.
Yeah. Yeah, this is fun. He won't call Pam back.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a recurring role, because when you look at the first season of Mandalorian, I mean, there's so many kind of cameos that they come and go in one episode.
Right. So, just passing through kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just rewatched the series over the weekend, or at least I started. I made it through 6 episodes. I'm saving the best two, the last two, for when I can sit down and like really absorb it. But yeah, I've been checking out the Disney Gallery series, which is the making of, the behind the scenes of The Mandalorian. They're 3 episodes deep so far, so that inspired me to rewatch the last season.
How is that series, by the way?
It's really kind of cool. I would actually highly recommend that. So I haven't really had time to sit and like dig into movies lately, although I have taken 6-hour swaths out of TV series when I sit down and do watch stuff, but it's usually in the middle of the night when I have no intention of sitting down and actually planning to watch anything. But it's cool because a new episode drops every Friday, just like when The Mandalorian did, it would drop on Friday as well. But it's interviews with the directors of the different episodes. And the last episode, episode 3 that just aired, was all about the cast. So they brought in the cast and they do like a round table kind of interview. And it's Jon Favreau and cast members, or Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni and the directors of the different episodes, that kind of thing. And they're just showing a ton of behind the scenes material and just talking about what it was like making it, or what inspired this particular episode, or what they were going for, what the challenges were, that kind of thing. All these nods to the original trilogy and keeping things right by Lucas and all that kind of stuff. It's just really kind of cool to be somewhat of a fly in the wall on the wall, because it's for a lot of this, it's like they're sitting around reminiscing, just having a good time, and we get to listen in on it. You know, it doesn't feel like we're being presented with something, or that they have an agenda presenting this to us. It's like all this cool stuff happened, and here's some of the, you know, some B-roll video just to show you what we're talking about while we're sitting here goofing around. It's really well put together. I like it a lot. You guys should, if you like The Mandalorian, and I know, David, I know you're on the fence about it, but
I am definitely not on the fence.
but no, if you like The Mandalorian, you should definitely check it out, because it gives you some extra insight to the show. And it's just amazing how they make that series. It's fucking amazing to know that, you know, they didn't have to do all the world traveling that other Star Wars media has to get the exact same look. For example, you know, you think it's shot in Tatooine, you think they went to Tunisia to do it, and they didn't, you know.
Right. It's
freaking amazing.
Background stuff.
Well, between
Hollywood, focus.
And those LED walls, the actual stagecraft technology, where you can literally just be anywhere, and it looks like you're physically there in a practical environment. It's just insane. Check it out. Highly recommended.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Eventually, it's going to be shooting on location is going to be a lost art. No one's going to know how to do it or budget for it or anything.
The cool thing about this is, you know, by shooting on a soundstage like that, you are keeping your crew size smaller. Your cast is not necessarily going to be smaller, depending on your project, that kind of thing. But it really seems like in a small microcosm kind of way, because the entertainment industry is really in the state of flux right now. Like, everybody's trying to figure out how we're going to bounce back after this pandemic, and how we're going to be able to get large groups of people back on set and make the kind of content that we're used to seeing. And the key is going to be to kind of start small, smaller projects, fewer people involved, and then kind of work bigger as the world sorts itself out. But having an opportunity like this, where you don't need to have a whole lot of people go and travel to a location, or you don't need to have so many crews come in and construct these big massive sets, when you can do it basically in a CG environment, you know, in the Unreal Engine, and then program it as to appear on these video walls essentially, and then just still be able to interact with it and have it in the background. I mean, it eliminates the need for so many big set pieces. It doesn't eliminate.
What if my job was to build those set pieces? Now am I just an asshole that's got to go look for work somewhere else?
You better learn how to program that wall.
Much. No, you're still building stuff. I mean, they're not entirely like practical sets free. The only thing that makes those video walls work as well as they do is you have to have enough practical set material around you to kind of like fill in the void and to bridge the gap between the real world and what's being essentially projected on those walls. But
I guess there's something to be said about sleeping in your own bed every night too. That's gotta be pretty cool. Instead of traveling the world.
As much as I would love to go to Tunisia and see the original locations, but if we're shooting something that takes place on Tatooine and all I have to do is like drive to LA to go to some I'm like, sweet. You know, I
don't know. On location shooting is pretty good, because you shoot your shit and then you're like 10 minutes from home. To where when you're shooting in LA, you got like an hour and a half of traffic.
Oh, that's true. That's an interesting.
But you're away from your family. I remember location shooting being fun for like the first half, the second half, you're like, oh man, I just want to go home.
Yeah.
I just want to get home to my
wife. I'm tired of all these hookers. I want my wife.
Yeah. I mean, you can only bury so many. The backyard's only so big.
Sure. Oh, Tunisia's pretty big.
A lot of sand.
A lot of problems in Las Vegas. Or a lot of holes in Las Vegas. And a lot of problems are put in those holes. Oh, that's crazy. I'm curious. Are your thoughts on Mandalorian, have they diminished at all while rewatching it? Because I feel like there was a couple of boring episodes or just kind of lame freak of the week episodes.
So, you know, I approached it from a different mindset when I knew those episodes were coming. For example, like, I wasn't a big fan of the fourth episode where he's on that green planet and they go up against the Raiders that have the AT-ST. I'm like, and it's still kind of unbelievable. I'm like, come on, a bunch of fucking Muppet Ewoks killed the AT-STs in Return of the Jedi without much of a problem, but just like dropping trees on them and stuff. And then they're like, there's nothing on this planet that can take down an AT-ST.
Trees!
Like, they didn't have any Ewoks on that planet.
Everywhere.
Yeah, like, Ewoks are amazing warriors, dude. Don't sell them.
And a bunch of them died. You see some die on screen. It's so sad.
It's so sad when the one gets up and the other one doesn't.
He's like pushing. Yeah. Like,
oh, breaks my heart just thinking about it.
I know. So that particular episode, which I still feel is probably the weakest of the bunch, enjoy a lot. I enjoy it a lot more. I also didn't really like the prison ship episode very much, but I like that one a lot more too. Like that one, like when I first watched it, I'm like, part of this is they emulated a horror movie. Like there's one scene where the lights are flickering and Mando's in the back of the hallway.
I like that part.
And he's like there, and it's like, and every other time it's like the hallway is empty. Yeah. It's like they're doing total horror movie shit. And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that in Star Wars. So it took me like a minute to adjust to it.
See, I like that because I like to see how he reacted to the situation. And you know, he didn't kill anybody, he didn't kill the guy who turned him in, he just led the Republic back to their little spaceship and let Dave Filoni, Deborah Chow, and Taika Waititi do all the dirty work.
Right. It was a very scoundrelly thing to do.
Yeah.
I like that too. I didn't like the acting in that episode. I thought the whole group of Bad News Bears ragtag mercenaries were terrible.
Yeah, I thought it was really over the top, like a bunch of people just goofing around like, oh, I'm going to be in Star Wars. And it's just like, just showed up to set drunk and just kind of like played.
I like Bill Burr, but yeah, the Twi'lek and the Devorian. The Devorian.
They just kept like hissing and hawing at each other. It was weird.
Yeah, particularly the Twi'lek. I was really. I feel terrible. I don't remember her name. She's fucking Tonks from the.
Nymphadora Tonks.
Yeah. And I know she's a decent actor because she's also in Game of Thrones and stuff. And I know she's a good actor. It's just like that particular character, I guess, I just didn't like. But even that episode, I appreciated it so much more the next time around. So here I am getting ready to, and my favorite episodes of the series of the first season were 7 and 8 because of the Imperial presence and just like how big it felt. And all of a sudden, just like things got big. And so I'm really anxious to rewatch those because I haven't seen them since they originally aired. And I am still hard and heavy on the Mandalorian train, the bandwagon right now.
What you got?
I got my Imperial Troop Transport toy right here next to me. It's full of stormtroopers. And I'm just going to be building some dioramas for my Mandalorian stuff because inside I am a 13-year-old boy that still plays with toys. And I freaking.
I guess that's better than being inside a 13-year-old boy.
Right. There's
an important toy. Right there.
Luring them into the back of my van.
You got to get your 3D printer to make dioramas.
So I found the in the ongoing saga of will Randy or won't he buy a 3D printer so he can make toys with it. I am so getting closer every day to pulling the trigger. I found 3D models to print out the mine carts from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and they are scaled for the 3¾-inch action figures. And
for everyone on this podcast knows you're going to get one. Might as well have it now and be enjoying it now.
I got to ease the wife into it.
didn't she just build a PC?
Yeah, she got the VR thing going on. She won't even notice.
I know. She just spent like $3,000 building a gaming computer. So it's like, can I buy a $400 3D printer? But still. Man.
Is that how much they are now? $400?
The one that I'm looking at, I'm looking because you kind of got to ease into it. You don't necessarily, if you're just learning to drive, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to buy a sports car. You probably want to, you know, get the old Ford Fiesta that is reliable and will get you there. So I'm gonna get a.
You don't have to sell us. We know you're gonna get one.
Well, okay. So there's this.
And I dare say that you're gonna get one, a cheap one. You're gonna have for like 3 months, regret it. Sell it, and you're going to buy the big one. You're going to buy the Civic. You're going to sell it. You're going to get the Cadillac.
Yeah, so yeah, $2,000 will get me this really badass one that does the resin printing as opposed to the filament printing.
Right.
Because I don't like, I hate the 3D models that have all the lines on them, the striations. And but what I'm realistically looking at getting is one of those kind, just because they're so much less expensive, and they really they make less toxic waste. So the resin printers, the ones that actually
not no print, toxic waste, less toxic waste.
Well, see, that's something to consider when working with 3D printers too, because the really cool ones that print in resin, like when you see these really clean models that people print out, and it's like, how did they get so much detail in there? These look amazing, and there's no print marks whatsoever. It looks like it was just straight manufactured out of a, you know,
Star Trek replicator.
It is so good. It is so good. Those ones are generally done on these resin printers, and they have small, inexpensive ones that I could do like action figure size stuff, and I can get some really clean prints. But as you know, because I've talked about it before, my goal is I want to print an action figure scale version of the Mandalorian ship, the Razor Crest, and I'm not going to be able to do it in these teeny tiny little sections from a small resin printer. Well, I found a large resin printer, $2,000. It's you know, consumer level. It's like the cheapest one you can get that size that would allow me to be able to kind of print the large stuff I want to do. And it's really high quality. But the problem is, okay, you need all sorts of ventilation because it releases noxious fumes when it's curing the resin. But also on top of that is, when you take the model out of the bath after it's, you know, the little laser is going through and hardening the resin layer by layer, you have to clean off any uncured resin. And to do that, what a lot of people use is isopropyl alcohol, like rubbing alcohol. So you have to make this bath of alcohol to dunk your models in and get the excess resin off. Well, you can do that a few times before that liquid becomes unusable for that purpose. It gets saturated with the resin and the crap and whatnot. So then you have this tub of hazardous material that you can't throw away, you can't dump, you have to like take it to a hazardous material disposal center, you know.
You don't have a bathtub?
it's an issue because I don't want to pollute the environment, and I figure, you know what? This 3D printing thing could be a fad. Maybe I'm just going to do it and just make some props, make myself a, you know, maybe a new suit of Mandalorian armor and some toys and stuff. And maybe it'll get rid of my fascination. And then, you know, then I don't have to.
Well, yeah. I've also been dabbling into looking into getting a 3D printer because I want to make helmets.
Oh, sweet.
I don't want to make most of the armor, just the helmets. I'm too fat for armor. And it looks like most people, they get the smaller one and they just like piece it together.
Yeah.
Like
a
Vader helmet is like 8 parts, and you put it together and you Bondo it and you sand it so it's smooth and stuff like that.
Yeah. And you're talking about the FDM printers that do the filament layers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? You can get smaller ones and like little tabletop desktop models. And you can get them for like $200, you know, and they're good and they will do fine. The one that I'm looking at has like a giant print tray at the bottom, like 400 by 400 by 400 millimeter or something like that. So I can print like entire sections of the ship's hull. Or there's this one guy online that's designing a Death Star playset, and it's modular and it's very similar to the multi-layered vintage one that I have and that I know you guys have seen in the past, but it's like for Return of the Jedi. So you've got like the Emperor's throne room and you've got all these things and it's so cool. And it's action figure scale for the 3¾-inch figure. So it's like, you're printing these giant pieces and elevator tubes and all this kind of stuff. So it's like,
for your hamsters to roam around.
Yeah. Less glue that I need to put something like this together, the better, you know?
Can I ask, what's the largest thing that you could print on that big bad printer that you want to get? Like,
I'm still between 300 and 400 millimeters is.
Yeah, I don't know.
So 40 centimeters. So 30 centimeters is a foot.
Okay.
So it's a foot and a third. So that's you know.
That's pretty decent. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I apologize to the metric people out there. I know it's not exactly 30 centimeters to a foot. Okay.
Sure.
We're dealing in estimates here.
Right. So. But that's the general idea. And I know I'm still going to have to glue some stuff together. I just don't necessarily want it to be completely covered in glue. And I want to be able to use the appropriately colored plastic to make all the bits and pieces and everything and make it look kind of like a toy that was, you know, manufactured, like, something I'm homebrewing.
But once you like sand it and paint it, then rid of all that shit.
That's the thing too. It's like certain things. Am I going to want to take the time to sand it down and smooth it out? Like with the Razor Crest, I definitely want that to be as smooth as possible because it's a silver ship, kind of like the Naboo ships from Episode One. Mm-hmm. So you know you want it to have that kind of like nice smooth reflectiveness going on. So that I'm definitely going to like bondo it up and sand it down and do what needs to be done just to get it as smooth as possible.
It's just, you got to throw it on the ground to weather it because in the West like to have our ships look like they've been through the ringer.
Pretty much, yeah.
Nobody wants a Razor Crest right off the factory floor.
we need blaster marks and shit.
I was reading a lot of forums. They use like auto paint. Like that's because that's got the nice shine and gloss and gleam.
Yeah. And if you put like a clear coat over it, that kind of thing too, it'll help seal it and make it look shinier.
You're gonna need that true coat.
Yeah. I mean, you're home now, Randy. You got a tiny bit. You got more time now than you have when you're actually in the office. You know, I'm just saying, this is the time. This is the time to strike while if you can even get one. So many things that are like this, like you can't even find. Like
I know, and people are having trouble getting the filament for it and stuff like that. So, I got a buddy. He does.
He knows a guy.
He does Ghostbusters events and fan films and stuff like that, and he prints proton packs and Ghostbusters gear all the time. He's got the exact same model that I'm looking at that can print big stuff, and I've seen a lot of his 3D printed stuff, and it is rugged, it is badass looking, and it's very cool. So if nothing else, at the very least, if I could just score some filament, maybe he would let me use his printer just to test it out. But if I can't get my hands on one right away.
It's funny you say Ghostbusters too, because when I think of like the old Ghostbusters toys from the 80s that had the proton packs and it came with like that little neon colored
and you plastic. Spin it and it looks like
it looks like those that filament stuff.
It does.
The
it
wire
does,
stuff. Yeah. That's kind of fun. You wouldn't even have to print that part. You could just cut one of the wires and just attach
Well, he doesn't do the toys, he does like full size props.
No, I know. I was just joking.
I know. I'm just like clarifying.
He should get does he have a trap?
Does he 3D print? He does, yeah. Trap? Yeah, he's printed a ghost trap, complete with like a little pneumatic foot pump thing that opens the doors.
Is he part of the group that makes the YouTube video series that you were telling me about?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
So Randy, how long until you get it so you can print me my Kylo Ren mask?
You want the one that he beat the shit of and destroyed? And then
I can send you all the bits and pieces of the broken mask. Okay, realistically, the school that I work at, it's finals week right now. So after this week, I'm going to be on my 4 days a week, 10 hours a day, working from home schedule. So I'll have 3 days off. And I won't have classes that I have to babysit all the time online, which is kind of cool. So I'll actually have time. Believe it or not, I've been working from home, sitting in on a lot of college classes and just doing all this shit to keep film production classes running online, which... it's insanely difficult because most of these classes were meant to be like hands-on studio-based classes. And I have been working like more than my 8 hours a day just keeping this train on the tracks. So now that we're finally approaching summer and I'm going to have some downtime, and I just finished the feature that I've been working on for the last year and a half, I'm going to have downtime. So I'm going to probably pour it into building toys. So
but you got to order it now so it gets there when you have the free time. You wait till the free time starts and you're wasting like 2 weeks.
Fair enough. So I'll look into it. I will keep you boys abreast of the situation.
Perfect. You don't even need to print me anything.
You don't
have to print me anything.
one week I'm going to show up to a podcast and I'm going to be using like a 3D printed microphone or something like that. Because I could. I ran out of things to make, guys, so I made myself a whole new microphone and headphone setup.
That's funny. I remember when I was engraving, I engraved everything I owned. I was like, oh, I need to put my initials on this. I need to put my initials on that. It was great. So you'll be surprised. You'll look around your house and be like, I don't need to buy new faceplates for my light switches. I'm just going to print my own.
Pretty much. I mean, that's a great thing. Again, same guy that does all of the Ghostbusters props. When this pandemic happened, he printed himself masks. All he had to do was buy the little filter kits that mount onto the side of it, but he printed his own masks. And the one that he sent me a picture of was fucking... oh, what's his name? The villain from Fury Road.
Morton Joe.
Yeah. 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 That's crazy. That big toothy face kind of thing. Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. You got to make me a Lisa from Weird Science.
Oh.
It's going to get weird, Randy.
I'm making Lisas, you know.
See, the problem with that is that it might be
just
a little
do stiff. It. Get the $2,000 one and just do it.
Get the one that's got the toxic waste.
Yeah. Yeah, a tray. Like the Foreman grill where you just have a little tray that you dump out.
You just
yeah.
You're done.
You get the little scrapers that go in the grooves and you
know. Yeah, easy peasy.
Yeah.
Like me and Lisa. She's in the Malacca's, Dino.
Why are we still talking about this?
Yeah, I'm gonna click buy it now.
There you go.
And then when Rachel asks, you'd be like, oh, the guys made me do it.
Yeah. The peer pressure was incredible. You wouldn't believe it.
They said they were going to pay for half.
Yeah.
Checks in the mail.
Yeah.
Man.
M-A-L-E.
There you go.
Hello. Yeah.
There you go.
It's not spicy.
Dave, earlier today you suggested that we share what we have been watching on the streaming service.
Yeah, I thought it'd be fun. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be a streaming service, but I thought if it was on a streaming service, yeah, we could share with our listeners and so they in case they wanted to go watch it. So Randall, what have you been watching?
Well, I was just talking about that Disney Gallery series, so I would recommend that. But I'm going to throw another series at you guys as well. And this is also on Disney Plus. So if any of you folks don't have Disney Plus, I apologize that I seem to be kind of harping on them, but just that's
shit, you got that's stuck in it?
But the other show is called Prop Culture. And it's basically they've got 8 episodes and it's surrounding 8 iconic Disney movies and the props that are still left behind by these movies. And
sounds like litter bugs.
No, it's not like left behind like waste, but just like what's left after the production, what survived. And you know, they're like digging through the Disney archives. Imagine like a warehouse like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it's just boxes and boxes of stuff from Disney movies from over the last like 80-90 years, right? And one of the first episodes, if not the first episode, was Mary Poppins. So they went and they found like the original Mary Poppins costume, like her original little handle from her umbrella and the original carpet bag and all this stuff. And they go
like,
and they
like a parrot handle or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. They go and they found the original costume designer and they reunited him with the costume. And they go and they actually talk to people like the dance choreographer, and they had like, these are the stand-ups that represented the little dancing penguins. You know, these survive. This is what the actors would be acting with kind of thing. And they have some amazing episodes. The second episode was Tron. So, of course, I was all over it. And they were able to find the original Tron outfit, and then Bruce Boxleitner was there just talking about like, yeah, you know, after about a week on set, we ended up getting a letter from the president of the studio saying that the entire cast of Tron was requested to wear their bathrobes when going to the commissary because the costumes were revealing and distracting to the other patrons. Because they're like skin tight and white, sure, which apparently doesn't leave much to the imagination. Right. You can see like everything through them. So, yeah, I thought that was just like an interesting little note to come out of this Disney show. But yeah, they've got like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and it's got Rick Moranis in it. The first time he's been seen like publicly in freaking forever. And he's in an interview talking about portraying Wayne Szalinski in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and it's got they're restoring the original shrink ray gun thing from the movie.
Oh, cool! Yeah, and where do you print that?
Well, they were talking about how having to replace parts. You know, like they had to remachine like the emitter part in the front of it. And then they used all period gadgets to put everything back together because they used that same shrink gun for every different movie, and every movie that followed the original, they made changes to it. They modified it to make it look cooler or whatever. So they stripped all that away. And other movies had used it as well for different things, and they got as many of the original parts back together, and they did a full restoration of it. But it's really kind of fascinating to see. And like
did they talk to your buddy Joe Johnson, who did Honey I Shrunk the Kids?
No, he was referenced a lot. He was in like archival footage, but he was
okay.
Original Zack Snyder.
There you go.
But
visual effects on Raiders too.
Totally. No, absolutely. They did a Roger Rabbit episode, which was amazing.
Amazing.
It was so good. It's so cool. Like, if you guys like classic Disney movies, and if you like kind of like the behind the scenes making of kind of elements of things, as we all do, and as I definitely do, this show really spoke to me.
What's it called again?
It's called Prop Culture.
Prop Culture.
Yeah, it's like pop culture with an extra R.
Got it.
But definitely check it out. Now, I will throw you guys one other thing that I'm watching that isn't on Disney Plus, but this is on CBS All Access. So it may be on the actual like terrestrial airwaves as well, but the remake of Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah.
New episodes of that, the new series.
Right.
They released it in with Jordan Peele.
Right.
Yeah.
Season 2 is now a thing, right? They're talking about it.
I'm still working my way through season 1. I just started watching it. I'm like 5 or 6 episodes in. But that is amazingly good. And if you have the CBS All Access app, if you have been watching the Star Trek content on there, you already have it. But they release the episodes in black and white if you want to watch it and make it feel like a 60s version of the show.
Cool.
And in full color. And, oh, my God, they're so good. They're so modern in the way that they're shot and the stories that they're telling. But they have the exact same feel that the original series did, and I love the original series. It is so good. Check it out if you get a chance, if you like that kind of stuff. But they have amazing guest stars. Like, the casting on that show is just phenomenal. So you guys will have a lot of fun with it.
I feel like the original was like that, too. It was like, wow, they got this A-lister to come on fucking Twilight Zone. That's crazy.
Totally.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, what are you watching, Justin?
Man. Mostly Netflix stuff. Watched Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3. Always fun. We talk about Back to the Future a lot, and 3 was the only one that was on Netflix for a spell, and then all of a sudden 1 and 2 showed up, so I decided to just plow right through all 3 of them. Always fun. And you know what's crazy, too, is to this day I still notice something that I never caught on the previous viewing, so that's always fun, too. And then on Stars, I've been watching a lot of Stars stuff lately. Harold and Maude, which actually we did a episode of Don't Be Crazy on it. I had seen it when I was in high school, and I owned my own copy of it, but I saw it was streaming, so I was like, oh, what the hell, I'm going to watch it. And I hadn't seen it in like 20 years anyway. So, and then I know Zach hadn't seen it, so I was like, hey, let's do Harold and Maude's Don't Be Crazy. So it was a pretty good conversation. That episode actually came out today as we record this on the 18th. And then I feel like there was one other thing that I watched recently, but it escapes me. The Milagro Beanfield War. Have you guys ever seen that? Directed by Robert Redford.
Mm-mm.
It is so charming and so funny. Love it to death. Should check it out. I watched that in government class and when I was a senior in high school, and I hadn't seen it since. And I was quoting it left and right. It left such an impression on me when I saw it that, I had immediately went and rented it on my own time and watched it again because I liked it so much. And then I hadn't seen it since. So, you know, 22 years had gone by since I'd seen this movie. And I was still just throwing out all the dialogue with it. And I was like, how many times have you seen this movie? I'm like, dude, I haven't seen this movie in 22 years. So it just left a really big impression on me. I think it's such a delightful film. Robert Redford has a pretty unique eye when it comes to his directing. And I just really, really enjoy that movie. It's on Stars. Nice. Check it out.
You watch a lot of Stars. Did you ever watch American Gods?
I haven't seen it. No. I know that that everyone was really, really enjoying it. And then what's his name? Jones got fired from it.
Duncan Jones?
No.
I don't know which Jones.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. The guy was like in the guy that was in Evolution with
Orlando Jones.
Orlando Jones, yeah, he had gotten let go from the show, and that was like a big fuss. It was too bad. But speaking of Duncan Jones, that's what I just watched. Moon.
Have
you seen that before?
Yeah.
Yeah. He actually wrote and directed that too. That's another movie that I watched, but I think that was on Netflix, not on Stars.
Yeah. Fun.
What have you been watching?
I watched a couple things. So like we mentioned Scoob earlier. I was amazed at how much I liked it because, you know, we're just trying to find, you know, fun family, you know, movies to watch. You know, have a movie
RoboCop.
Night, stuff like that. RoboCop is definitely on the list. But what I loved about Scoob was it was a Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe type thing. Like Dick Dastardly's in it, you know, Muttley's in it, you know, Blue Falcon's in it, Dino Mutt, Captain Caveman, Great Ape, like all these.
What, Jabberjaw?
I did not see Jabberjaw.
Or the Eggsin, Stage Love, that guy. What's his name? Like Snagglepuss?
Snagglepuss, yeah. So they had a bunch of them, and it brought back. I used to watch a show called Laugh Olympics when I was a kid, and it was all the Hanna-Barbera characters, and they did, like, you know, think like a. Battle of the Network Stars type thing to where they don't like just battle in these crazy things, but it's neither here nor there. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely worth watching. It's got a crazy insane cast, like Will Forte plays Shaggy, Mark Wahlberg's in it, Jason Isaacs is Dick Dastardly, Zac Efron's in it, Amanda Seyfried's in it, Jen Jeong is in it, Tracy Morgan, Frank Welker, the kid who plays young Sheldon is in it. So there's a lot of great characters, character actors in it. It's definitely worth checking out. The main thing I want to talk about, though, is I watched on Apple Plus, they have the Beastie Boys story. And it's a full-length documentary about, you know, the Beastie Boys, the two surviving members of the band. And, you know, I grew up loving the Beastie Boys, you know, believe it or not. You know, this cool white kid here. I remember going around Table Pizza and just blasting, you know, you got Pfeiffer at the party on their jukebox. And it was really interesting to see these, you know, people that are probably in their late 40s, early 50s talk about, you know, writing a song about like partying and frat boy life and stuff like that when they hated those kind of people. And so they, you know, almost kind of grew to like hate their music for a small section of time. And, you know, talking about, you know, songs like Girls in the lens of like, you know, 2020, you know. And so it's just funny. They were like just reading the lyrics, you know, Girls.
Yeah, all I really want is Girls.
Yeah. Yeah, two at a time, I want Girls.
I'm not going to wait a day. What? He and his children hear him talk.
That's my Beastie Boys voice. Yeah. Sorry.
And so it was great to listen to them talk about it. And they actually had a really good quote. And it, you know, it's pretty timely because, you know, everyone's so judged upon their past. And it was, you know, how can you talk about women's rights now? Singing that song, doesn't that make you a hypocrite? And Mike D said, I'd rather be a hypocrite than the same guy I was 20 years ago. And so I thought that was just a very good way to think about it, especially in today's cancel culture. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing I want to talk about was I watched all three Matrix movies over the course of the last couple of days. And I'm here to say the second two Matrix movies aren't terrible. I think we all watched them in the lens of the Matrix being the revolutionary film that there was, but there's a lot of deep moments in the second and third Matrix movie, and I think they're pretty good. And you should give them a walkthrough.
It's actually on the to do list because of Don't Be Crazy. I wanted to do like the Matrix, either just the first one or the whole trilogy. I had read this essay about the allegory of transgender with tied to the Matrix, and it was fascinating. Like just the idea of being, you know, trapped in this world and not belonging. And it just puts a whole new spin on things. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy shit, dude. I obviously did not make that connection when it was the Wachowski brothers. And I never gave it a second thought when it was no longer the Wachowski brothers. But having read it, it seems like it is just as clear as, you know, the nose on your face kind of thing.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. And it's great. Everyone knows the first Matrix is, you know, an amazing film, and the second two kind of got shit on, but they're pretty fantastic. You should check them out.
Where do you stand, Randy, on the Matrix movies? Do you like those?
I've always been a big lover of the first one, and the second one I could really kind of pass on at any given time. And the third one I was lukewarm about. But granted, I mean, it has been a long, long time since I've seen two and three. Like a long time, like probably since they came out in the theaters.
That's yeah, I was gonna say like 17 years probably.
So I really need to revisit them after hearing that and kind of like looking at it through that lens. It's like, okay, these movies deserve a rewatch, not just the first one, which is usually the only thing that's kind of in my rewatch queue.
Yeah, because I think the first one sets up, you know, the Neo is the one thing, and that's really the thread that I think most people want, the rabbit hole most people want to go down Whatever.
Wait.
I don't think that's the same goes. And so, but you know, looking at it now and watching it, you know, what would that look like in a society? And we get to see it on Zion, and we get to see how people treat him, and you know, just the way everyone changes around him. And it's just a fascinating look through, you know, especially in our times now, you know. We got some dark times going on right now, and it's good to see, you know, films like this, and you know, just having a positive message. And you know, we have the Keanu sense, you know, ever since John Wick, you know, Keanu Reeves is like the thing, and so it's great to see kind of his second emergence. You know, he had Bill and Ted, then he was Neo, now he's John Wick. So I'm always a fan of Keanu Reeves. So
Mr. Weak.
So that's pretty much all I got.
That's good. I remember when the second one came out, for some reason we ended up at your house. I don't know, maybe someone was moving. Were you moving that weekend? Were you moving out of your apartment to your house? I feel like we were moving somebody. Maybe your brother was moving. We were helping some asshole move. I remember having to bring my truck, and we were talking about it. And I remember at the time, none of us really got Matrix Reloaded. I thought I remember. I there was parts that I liked. Like I told you, I like the Merovingian or whatever, the French dude. You're like, no, yeah. You don't. Nobody likes him. I'm like, I don't know. That was kind of cool. I like the way he talked. And then the third one, I loved how it was released worldwide all at the same time. So if that meant going to the theater at 4 a.m, then fuck off. You're the guy going to the theater at 4 a.m. I thought that was pretty neat. I dug that gimmick. There aren't too many theater gimmicks these days. And, you know, the endings in Clue is a pretty fun one. And the idea that everyone had to go see the third Matrix at the same time was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I like how the music evolves. You know, the music in the first Matrix it's okay, but it's kind of basic, you know, sci-fi film score. And by the time you get to the second and third one, they have this just super grandiose, like operatic, you know, just score that just hits you. Like, so when the Agent Smith and Keanu Reeves fight, or Neo fight at the end, the only thing that doesn't really stand up is some of the effects are, you know, very dated.
Yeah, video gamey. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with, like, especially the second one, when Neo fights like 100 Agent Smiths. Right. It looks like something, you know, that I animated, and that's not a compliment.
Sure. I mean, something you animated in 2020 versus something that was animated in 2003. Right. So, I mean, that's still pretty good. but yeah, like his glasses and the way his jacket flows when he's fighting them. That is weird. But anytime he does a Superman pose is pretty cool. And I like it whenever he's coming to save them. It's always like, oh, fuck yeah. Like, Superman's here, man. It's on.
Yeah.
The one thing that I did find interesting is that there was a little less stress when they had to fight an agent. In the first one, it was certain death if an agent was on your trail. Whereas in this one, I feel like everyone's fighting agents.
Yeah, they saw that it could be done.
Yeah, maybe it's that's what it was. Oh. It gave them the confidence that they needed.
Yeah, they had it inside them all along.
they were given the tools they needed to be successful.
Yeah, and it's like that Neo knows that, like, fuck all you guys, nothing can hurt me kind of thing. Like, so like the second one, he's just fighting like armies of people, and he's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
And he is the one.
I believe in you, Neo. Yeah. Or is it Neo? I believe in you.
I think it's the second one. I think it's Neo. I think it's just Neo, I believe.
Oh, yeah. The little mousy kid?
Yeah. The kid from the Animatrix.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like the Animatrix. That was fun.
Yeah. He's the one that Neo lets out.
Yeah. It's really it's depressing, though. Especially, I like that. I really like the one where it shows why the machines turn on the humans.
Because we're pieces of shit.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. It's like, okay, that kind of makes sense. Yeah. Humans are the worst.
And then like the one robot shows up in like House of Representatives and he's a bomb and he just kills everybody.
Yeah. Oh, that's hardcore. I need to watch that again. Yeah. I really enjoyed it though. So creative.
Yeah, it was like eight movies.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
And I remember The Flight of the Osiris, which is what they reference in the second one. Right. That was they played that before Final Fantasy Spirits Within, which is not a good movie.
No. But that is crazy. And you see, like, they know that it's a clue that, like, an invasion is coming, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
They had the data. And that was one thing, too, that there was the video game tie-in that you got to see what Jada, what they were doing when they were on their mission. It was all really cool stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, last week I was complaining about having to fucking read this book, read that book, play this video game just to all make it make sense. But at the end of the day, that was a pretty big journey that they put everyone on.
Yeah.
And I guess I can applaud them for that.
And you can enjoy it, but it wasn't something that was integral. Like the Flight of the Osiris, they're the ones who got like the scans that all the Sentinels were coming to destroy Zion. They said it in the movie, like, the scans from the Osiris are correct. The Sentinels are coming.
Yeah, that's and all we then, needed. Two sentences of exposition,
But if we watched that, we got the whole thing where, like, they're running from agents and trying to get this information to them. And so, you know, it gave us another layer that business in Canada Modia doesn't.
Yeah. And then their ship just explodes, right? That's how the episode ends. Like, they get exploded.
She puts the disc in the mail as the ship explodes, and then she does the little
pass out. That's terrible. And, you know, I just had a really interesting point and I totally lost it. That sucks. No, it's not your fault at all. I had it and I lost it. I'll think of it later.
Was it about the Osiris? Was it about Animatrix?
I have no, it was about the Animatrix, but I have no idea what it was.
Aww.
It doesn't matter. The point is moot. It is gone. Moot.
You built a moat? What?
Shit.
I know a guy named Mike Moats.
Oh, yeah. Do you really?
I do.
How's he spell it?
M-O-A-T-S.
Oh. I was going to say, because the president of Staples is a Moats. Or Mott's. Tomato, tomato.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
Yeah. Anywho. Shit, man. The Matrix.
Yeah, check it out.
I will. I will check it out. Let's all watch it and then do our homework.
All right.
And we'll talk about it again.
I literally finished Revolutions an hour before a podcast.
And it's on Netflix right now?
Yeah, all three of the Matrix movies are on Netflix. The Scoob is also obviously a new release, so that's something you have to pay for. And the Beastie Boys is streaming on Apple TV, which I learned we get for free because of my wife got a phone.
So yeah, promotion.
Yeah,
I always forget that they're not in space. I've talked about that on the podcast when it comes to not the Beastie Boys but the Matrix. Like,
they're not in
space whenever either. Whenever they get out of ship, it's like, no, put your helmet on. But it's just ugly Earth. That's too bad.
But yeah, if you ever had any inkling that you enjoyed the Beastie Boys, they are great storytellers, and it's definitely a documentary we're checking out. It was a lot of fun.
Zach was going on about it on Don't Be Crazy.
Oh,
he's a big fan. I have License to Ill, and I have Hello Nasty. Still, I still have both of those albums.
Nice. You know, it was funny when to hear them talk about License to Ill, that it was, you know, this huge revolution record that changed their life, and, you know, it meant this to them. And then over the course of them touring with it for over the years, they kind of turned into everything they hated type thing. And you know, looking back now, they can enjoy their success, but at the time they were like, fuck, I hate myself.
Right.
And then they poured their heart and soul into their second record, which is Paul's Boutique, thinking like, oh man, this record is way better than the last one. This one's going to be huge. And then like nobody bought it. And they're like,
that has what?
Yeah. Right. And they're like, so I guess we're failures now. And then they made
Sabotage.
They made Ill Communication, which had Sabotage, which is huge. And then Hell and Asti, you know, had Intergalactic Planetary, Intergalactic.
Sorry.
If you sing any more of that, we're going to have to pay rights to use that.
right.
And then it went into, you know, Adam Yolk, you know, becoming the, you know, the free Tibet person, you know, and becoming kind of like one of the first, you know, big activists of our era. Right.
With Richard Gere.
Yeah.
They would share porter potties at the same time.
Tibetan freedom concerts and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, remember you could order those shirts like online. Not online, like over the phone. Kind of thing. Call now, donate, you know, get a shirt.
Operators are standing by.
What a fun job that is. It's not his work, but whatever. Call center work sucks, dude. It's a whole nother breed of human being, and I applaud you if you've done it. I got to do it for a whopping 2 months and decided it was not for me. It was the worst. Hated every second of it. I am a busy bee, And I can't sit there and have my phone conversations be timed and there be this magic number that I'm trying to get to and then answer as many calls as I can in a day. It's just too much. Especially when you get an old person that just loves to talk and you're like, look, dude, I love that you love talking to me, but you're fucking up my metrics right now. It's terrible.
I can attest it is terrible. And then you get the one call who, like, it was a disconnected call, but they didn't hang up on their end. So according to the computer, you're on the call. So you're like, oh, I just bought myself 10 minutes and nothing to do.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's people just got tired of waiting. But didn't hang up their phone. I'm like, sweet.
Yeah.
Gonna run to the restroom real quick.
And then you have some person that's in charge that gets to go over your calls and how well you're doing. And they don't have that job to answer calls, but they know what it's all about, of course, right? Because they're amazing people. And they say, man, you really suck at your job, dude.
You should probably let me go.
Yeah. I won't take offense. I'm not, it's okay. I remember I had actually worked at AAA as the roadside service, and I decided after a phone call that the person was so upset with me that it was going to be a 2-hour wait when they locked their keys in their car that they just felt that they had to vent to me. And I understand they're frustrated. They locked their keys in the car, and it's annoying. But when you live on a little island out in the middle of the Puget Sound, it's going to be a minute before a truck can get on a ferry and go to your location and unlock your car. And wow, they weren't having that. Now I'm like, now of course, if you lived in anywhere else, you know, on land, that would be great. Southern California, I could have a truck to you in 10 minutes, but you live on an island. So you're going to have to wait. And after I hung up that call, I had just started my day. This was like 8 a.m. and I went to the manager's office. And I'm like, yeah, it's not working out. I can't do this anymore. And the guy's like, are you going to put in your 2 weeks? And I'm like, nah, dude, I'm done. I'm going to go ahead and just go. He's like, well, you realize you're not eligible for rehire. I'm like, that will not be a problem. I can assure you I never need to work here again. Thank you for your time. I have cleaned my headset and I'm going to take off.
Yeah, my supervisor was a guy named Patrick Runo, and he kind of gave me my come to Jesus moment. Like, I utterly just loathed every second of working at AAA. The company's great, but like, yeah, I'm like Justin, I'm not a call center kind of guy. You know, I'd gone from doing like film for like 4 years to where like I had like basically no schedule, like just kind of like you make a movie, you work, and then you're off, to every second of my life being accounted for. And I remember he called me aside after one of my calls and was like, so can you describe this job to me? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not doing it, I don't really like this, blah blah blah. And he's like, would you call this work soul crushing? And I'm like, that is a very good term for it. And I was just, and it was right at the time when I had gotten an offer to go be the editor at anaheim.com, but it didn't pay anything, but it was obviously something that I would be infinitely more happy doing. And I talked to my wife about it, and she was like, well, if you need to do it, you need to do it. And it was finally, I'm like, well, I got this other thing. I was thinking about taking it, but, you know, obviously Auto Club's more secure. And he's like, well, I suggest you take it because I can tell that you just fucking hate it here. And I was like, oh, okay. I thought my numbers are good. He's like, your numbers are great, but I can tell that you're going to just come one day and just flip your desk and like run out of here.
Kill everybody in this building.
And so I left. I'm still friends with him to this day. He's a good guy. And so I appreciate his honesty.
Yes.
And it led me on the path to where we are today.
And that's a good manager, dude. Because, like, that's the thing, right? Even when I was managing Target or Staples, you know, when I would interview people for a position, I would say, you know, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Even if they were, like, 50 years old. And they would tell me, and I would say, whatever you need me to do to get you there, let me know. Happy to help you in any way I can. This is just a detour on your journey that we call life. And whatever you need from me to get you where you want to be, where you'll be most happy, I will do whatever I can in my power to get you there.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you should do as their leader.
Yeah. Like, I like you and all, but, you know, get the fuck out of my store.
like, I'm gonna need you. You into my job? Yeah.
When can you start? More importantly, when can you leave?
This truck ain't gonna empty itself.
Ah, sorry. Oh no, it was great. I was a merciful lord. I did everything in my power to make everyone happy. Good stuff. It's kind of fun not being that guy anymore, though.
Now Riot Club works from home. I called to change something on my insurance for Riot Club, and this guy was talking. I'm like, oh, yeah, which call center? You own the one in Anaheim? You had Signal Hill? He's like, oh, no, I'm at home right now. He's like, yeah, they about a year ago, they sent us all to work from home. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Gee,
I might not have hated my job as much if I could just go everywhere.
All they need is a facility for their vehicles. Most of the trucks are all, you know, third party, but they have their own couple of like fleet vehicles or whatever. But that's neither here nor there. This is the AAA podcast. Jinx Pinch Poke. You owe me a Coke, but I'll take a Monster too. I like those. Just throwing that out there.
I know you do.
Anywho, does anyone have anything else to add? Randy, have you got your printer yet?
No.
I see your eyes kind of going back and forth like you're reading something.
I assume that's why you were so quiet.
I may or may not be on an order screen.
Just do it.
Yeah, don't be a weenie. Just do it. I mean, you gotta take the money out of your wallet. It's all electronic. It's easy.
And really, Randy, how long can she be mad at you?
I mean, we're stuck in the same house for who knows how much longer, so I don't know.
Exactly.
Your lives.
But if she's gonna be mad and she's gonna, you know, kick you to the garage, at least she'll have the printer. You can print stuff.
Print your own garage.
I can print myself a bed.
Yeah, a little model house of where you used to get to live.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Anywho. Well, Dave, do you have anything else to add?
Yep. I got nothing.
Right.
Other than hit that buy button, Randy.
Right.
Yeah.
Buy it now. Ship today. Pay like $60 expedited shipping to get it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Have someone run it over.
Yeah, that's a no.
Go for it.
What you do is find a 3D printer that's $5,000, and then now you're like, oh, there's this $5,000 one, but I decided, you know, I didn't need the $5,000 one. I was thinking smart. I was thinking long term. And I think that the $2,000 printer is going to do what we want it to for, you know, 40% the cost.
Yeah.
Just invest in yourself.
And then just find like three things around the house that you can 3D print. And like, just be like, hey, you know, look, she's just got that new PC. You know, it's got knobs. It may need new knobs.
What computer are you using that has knobs?
Yours doesn't have dials and knobs and switches.
And right. Like these big racks of cassette tapes spinning.
Yeah. Tubes and
like, stuff. Like something that you found in Alien. Like that sweet ass
right.
Button tech.
Think of all the steampunk stuff you can make.
Dude, remember Doc Brown was the first steampunk guy in the
scabbards and hilts? You can make scabbards and hilts?
Yeah, she needs scabbards and hilts. She's a sword player. Yeah. What do you call those?
Sword person?
What is the technical term for what she does?
I mean, there are, you can be a swordsman or, in her case, a swordswoman, I guess.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're ready for the zombie apocalypse. She's gonna be your Brianna Tarth.
Yeah, seriously. I'm going to get behind her.
3D print matching hilts for her entire team.
I'll be behind her. She'll have the sword, and I'm going to have, like, my World War I era pistols. Like, hold on. Let me reload. Ka-dunk, ka-dunk, ka-dunk.
That's rad.
Yeah,
you can hold her sword ammo for when they break. You can just give her another one. You're like, hold on, babe. Let me print you a sword.
Make her little targets that she can like jab at. I don't know.
We have a little like practicing dummy that we set up in the backyard every once in a while. It's basically this 4x4 wooden stick with some 2x4s and sandbags to hold it upright. And it's one of her old fencing masks and like an old beach towel shoved up underneath it. And it's all like duct taped onto this thing. So she's practicing like hitting it in the head and stuff. That's so nice. It's just kind of fun.
Well, now you can make little targets.
I'm picturing like Sword in the Stone, where he's got like that little wheel when they're practicing like the jousting. It's like a knight on a horse scenario. It's pretty rad.
Yeah.
It could be her squire.
This is my life. Yeah, I am in this scenario. I am the squire. Yeah.
You can make things for the cat. Cats love plastic
armor. Things. I'm gonna make armor for the cats.
Now we're talking.
Cat armor? Are you kidding me?
And then, forget about it. And then they could fight each other. One could ride the other, like He-Man.
Battle cat. And he-
Oh my god! You can make some battle cat armor. Oh,
that would be rad.
Yeah.
Just saying, Randy. It's
Well, I've been wanting an excuse to get better at 3D modeling, and if I'm like designing things to print out, then I'm gonna have to get pretty good at it. So, I don't know. You guys are making a lot of sense, and I've always wanted a scale accurate replica of the actual temple from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. You know, like with the big Kali statue and the big opening trap door where they send the cage down with Willie in it and everything. I built one out of cardboard and paper mache when I was a kid. And damned if I'm not going to 3D print one now in my adulthood.
So here's what you do. You attach some memory to it about like your friend who had it, and then he drowned in a pool and you never got to play with it again. And now you desperately want to play with it again. And you think it would just make you a more complete human being if you had the closure to be able to play with it again. And now you can make your own.
But she brings up a good point, though. She's when I talk about, I'm going to build a scale accurate Razor Crest, which would be like 3 feet long. She's like, where are you going to put that? And I'm sitting here in my very small office that I already have so much stuff that I can't
possibly hang from the ceiling. Can it hang from the ceiling?
Well, it could, but I want to actually use it like for diorama purposes. Like I want to have like hatches open and like activity happening around it. And I'm going full like 40-year-old virgin with this.
Randy, so. We're talking Lucite coffee table. Glass top coffee table. Recessed in there. You got the Razor Crest. You got the Mandalorian. You got Cara Dune. You got Baby Yoda. It's a conversation piece. It brings people to your house and you can entertain them there.
All right. I'll have to clean up that glass top table that I've been using for other purposes.
And, yes, and what you do is you sell it to her by creating a signature cocktail that is both delicious and highly alcoholic, so that she's in a happy mood. And then she'll be like, did we order a 3D printer last night? Oh yeah, express shipping from Alibaba means no refunds, so no take backs.
Oh man,
hope you like that Baby Yoda.
Yeah, Alibaba, you have to buy like quantities of 1,000 to make it worthwhile.
You need to call that crazy Indian.
What's that?
Oh, crazy kidney.
Or just use two credit cards so she thinks it costs half as much.
There you go. That's a good idea. I'm still sold on the Battle Cat armor. I think that's cool. I can get you my Battle Cat armor that I have off my figure to give you your inspiration to make it.
Yes.
I'll tell you what. I'll just look at some pictures and I'll create my own spin on it.
That's not as fun.
But you have to buy it first.
You've had 1 hour and 40 minutes to buy this printer.
I know. It's like, why is it not here yet?
He could have had a FedEx tracking number by now.
All roads lead to, I got to buy this thing.
There you go.
Let me see if it's on Amazon.
Just do it. And then we'll end the podcast.
In the background of the podcast, you're just going to hear like, as it's like printing.
Yeah, it takes a while.
I don't even know what kind of sounds they make. But
is it next week you're in a totally different location podcast?
Yeah, the only printer sound I know is like dot matrix printing sound.
And that's pretty much the print sound that I just mimicked too.
Yeah.
So next week, I'm gonna be podcasting from my car from under the freeway because that's where I'll be living.
No, you can hang out with your other buddy who does 3D printing.
Yeah. Look at all that space Edmondson has
in his
garage.
We can set up. I got cots.
I'll 3D print a bed and I'll crash in your garage.
I have cots. I have air mattresses. I might even just sleep inside the house. I got couches.
I'm not potty trained yet, so it's probably best.
That's okay. I'll put down some newspaper for you.
Nice. Okay, perfect. We're set.
Yeah.
I like the feel of fresh print on my ass.
Put some sawdust down.
Or peanut shells.
I was going to say peanut shells.
Like a classy bar, you know.
I was going to say, man, that's just making me like crave a barbecue restaurant right now.
You could print the peanut shells. I noticed that everything that we've suggested that you print costs like a dollar at the store. I'm curious how much the materials are that you would be spending to make these things.
Yeah, the materials aren't that much really when it comes down to it, but what you're buying is the convenience of not having to be out.
You just need 4 hours for it to print.
Yeah.
You gotta do it when you go to bed.
Exactly. I wake up in the morning and it's done. Yeah, can't find my screwdriver, I'll print one.
Or it could be like the dot matrix printer where it just keeps doing the same line over and over and over again. It got stuck.
Yeah. Oh, and that does happen too. So that's why I want to get a relatively easy one to use, a good starter unit.
Yeah. A good starter unit. We'll call it that. Yeah. I mean, they get more expensive than buy the $2,000 one now, like Edmondson said, and then get your $5,000 one when you're ready. Easy.
Whatever happened to the $400 one? We skipped right over that.
This one sold out.
It's sort of like a baby bear, mama bear, papa bear situation. You got to find the middle one that works.
Right, exactly.
You're like, well, you want me to be happy, right, babe?
Yeah.
I wasn't going to be happy with the $400.
Sell the shit that you print to make it pay for itself.
See, that's a good idea because...
Etsy, baby.
Right, or even just eBay, whatever.
Go to OfferUp. I'm sure there's a lot of husbands who have bought them without wife's permission and they're now having
to unload it.
Yeah.
That's right.
There's some truth to that, I'm sure.
Let's see.
Thank you for listening to another fun and festive episode of the 3D Printing Podcast. We hope you had a lot of fun. We certainly did. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Geek Legacy. It is a lot of fun. Check out the other podcasts we have. We have, of course, the Pixelated Podcast with Stephen K. James and myself, and then the Don't Be Crazy Podcast with Mr. Zachary Dale 60. Actually, I think he's at Zach Dale 60. He's a fine young man. Uptown all the way. Check him out. I guess we will just see you next week and the week after that, all the way up to episode 600. Looking forward to it. You folks have a wonderful night and even better week. And we will see you in 7 days.